Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Retail Federation, an industry association offering products and services that help small businesses cut costs and increase revenue, serving Florida's retailers since 1937. The Florida Retail Federation, frf.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection, with connections to over 330 destinations worldwide. Fares and information online at delta.com. And from the Florida Historic Capital Museum, presenting Navigating New Worlds, Identity, Perception, and Politics in Florida, an exhibit showcasing rare maps and prints from the Michael W. and Dr. Linda Fisher collection. Information at flhistoriccapital.gov. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
It's the end of the second week of the 2013 Florida legislative session. A bill that would knock out internet cafes is on the fast track in the legislature, but that leaves some raising concerns.
This is nothing but what we consistently seem to do around the Florida House, and that is a knee-jerk reaction to something that took place.
A week after the Medicaid expansion died, House Democrats are demanding federal money still be used to insure low-income Floridians.
There's been talk about whether we would even seek to obtain the funding from the federal government. We think the thought of not obtaining that funding is crazy. It's a no-brainer.
And we'll also hear about turning public school buildings over to charter school operators, saving more young abuse victims from trauma in the courtroom. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Lawmakers are working to combat what they call gray market gaming. Regan McCarthy reports a bill aimed at knocking out internet sweepstakes cafes passed a Florida House committee today with a 15-1 vote, just 3 days after officials announced a case against the internet cafe operator Allied Veterans of the World.
You might think an internet cafe would sound something like this. A coffee shop filled with college students, businessmen, and a few friends who maybe have been there all night playing World of Warcraft. But this is what a typical internet cafe in Florida actually sounds like. Internet cafes are what opponents call tiny corner casinos. There, people pay for internet time, then log into a computer where they open slot machine-like games that let participants win cash or prizes. The cafes are largely unregulated and operating in a loophole because cafe owners claim the games aren't gambling, they're sweepstakes. And for a while now, lawmakers and community leaders have been looking to shut them down, claiming they're linked to crime like robbery and that they prey on the poor and the elderly. And that plan got a big push forward when officials announced racketeering charges against a major internet cafe operator. The House Gaming Committee rewrote its bill the day before its first hearing Friday, and just days after the announcement. Representative Carlos Trujillo, a Republican from Doral, is the bill's sponsor.
The main thing that it does is specifically clarifies their legislative intent, as these machines have always been illegal. We're just further instructing law enforcement and state attorney's office that we continue to see them as being illegal.
But some, like Representative James Waldman, a Democrat from Coconut Creek, are raising concerns about how quickly the bill is being pushed through.
This is nothing but what we consistently seem to do around the Florida House, and that is a knee-jerk reaction to something that took place.
Representative Matt Gaetz argues banning internet cafes is an issue that's long been under consideration in the Florida legislature.
This House has been debating these issues for years. We've passed legislation. We've dedicated floor time, committee time.
But Representative David Richardson, a Democrat from Miami Beach, says he's not so sure Representative Gaetz's assessment is relevant.
This House and this committee has not studied this issue. A former House and a former committee has studied this. And I hope that Representative Gaetz was not suggesting, because this issue has been studied in the past, that I must necessarily vote based on the deliberations of a former House or a former committee.
And others say they want to be sure any legislation that is passed comes along with the proper budget allocations, so prosecutors and law enforcement officers can ensure any remaining facilities close their doors. Representative Waldman was the only vote against the bill. The Senate is expected to take up its version of the measure Monday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A week after both houses of the Florida legislature rejected the expansion of Medicaid under the federal health care law, Democratic leaders in the Florida House are speaking out. Jessica Palumbo reports House Democrats are saying more Floridians need insurance coverage as soon as possible, one way or another.
It's a common refrain from Florida Democrats about the state's lack of implementation of the federal Affordable Care Act. House Minority Leader Perry Thurston talked to reporters on Thursday.
You know, we're here to address the House Democratic position and perspective on the lack of vision and foot dragging that's been demonstrated by the House as well as the Senate as it relates to extending medical coverage to working Floridians.
Thurston says the federal law offered Medicaid coverage to an additional million uninsured Floridians, and the expansion would have been funded entirely by the federal government for the first 3 years. House Minority Leader Pro Tempore Mia Jones, a Democrat from Jacksonville, says that's an unprecedented offer.
We're looking at $55 billion of federal funds that we would be able to access over the next 10 years, and it would only cost the state $3 billion. And those are dollars that we cannot afford to leave on the table or to let other states take advantage of.
Thurston says the money would save the lives of people who are uninsured now.
And as the study from the New England Journal of Medicine has indicated, by expanding this coverage, we will save the lives of Floridians over and above 5,000 annually. That's the critical thing that the citizens need to know about.
He also says hospitals and people who already have insurance should care about expanding coverage because they're the ones who are ultimately paying for uninsured people.
Clearly, they're going to continue to have to provide that uncompensated care. And that's when we think that all Floridians should be concerned. Floridians who are fortunate enough to have insurance, those of us who do, will continue to bear the burden of that uncompensated care at the most highest cost, emergency room service.
Hospitals have spoken out in support of the Medicaid expansion. After the House and Senate voted no to expanding Medicaid, House Democratic leaders are saying they could support an alternative proposal called the Florida Plan by Senator Joe Negron, a Republican from Palm City. Under his plan, the state could potentially use the same amount of federal funding and channel it through a state program called Florida Healthy Kids to expand coverage to low-income parents.
We want the coverage for the Floridians. And if it comes under a different name other than affordable health care, if it's the Florida plan, we are in support of that.
Jones says any compromise plan must essentially provide the same coverage as the Medicaid expansion would have.
Whatever plan the Florida plan comes up with, if it's not us simply going with what has been laid out for us, that we make sure those services and those levels of service are provided.
Jones says they include preventative care coverage, primary care doctors, and making sure people are covered to see doctors near where they live. And Thurston says, of all the ideas floating around in the legislature, there's one that's simply not an option.
There's been talk about whether we would even seek to obtain the funding from the federal government. We think the thought of not obtaining that funding is crazy. It's a no-brainer.
Thurston says Floridians should be, in his words, in an uproar at the idea of not extending health care to more people. Meanwhile, Senator Negron is working on his Florida plan proposal and has not presented a formal bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers debate whether Florida's charter schools should have free access to unused public school buildings.
I would tell you that you'll have a hard time finding a public school educator that's going to feel like this is a plan that best serves the needs of the students that are in public schools.
Some are hoping a bill will pass this session to give more child sex abuse victims an option rather than face their abuser in court.
A very young child will say, well, he touched me on my pee-pee. Then when they get to be 14 years old, they don't say that. They're embarrassed about it. so being able to use that tape for a jury trial is a tremendous tool.
And federal officials give Florida the green light to come up with its own water quality standards.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities, a skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org.
Charter schools are state-funded, but they're also free of many rules and regulations that govern traditional public schools. That's because charters get less funding than regular schools do. The biggest funding inequity seems to be in building and construction. But as Lynn Hatter reports, the Florida House has been working on a bill that would change that.
Charter schools began in Florida in the late 1990s under former Governor Jeb Bush. And at the time, one of the main arguments for them was that they could do more with less. However,
if you fast forward 16 years later, they are finding out they cannot do it for less money.
That's Wayne Blanton, head of the Florida School Board Association. There are more than 2,500 traditional public schools and more than 500 charters in Florida. And in the last few years, conflicts have emerged over funding for building, maintenance, and construction. A fund called the Public Education Capital Outlay, which is supported by taxes on things like landlines, has historically gone to fund public schools. But Blanton says in recent years, revenue for the fund has dropped sharply.
In the last 2 years, charter schools have gotten all the public education capital outlay dollars that are available, and that was $55 million 2 years ago and $55 million last year. So it appears to me that the promise of increased academic performance and the promise of being able to do it with less dollars has not been put forward or not been followed up on by the charter schools.
And building new schools costs money. During the last 2 years, charter groups have backed bills pushing for additional funding, mostly in the area of construction and maintenance. Last year, a proposal requiring districts to share a portion of local tax revenue with charter schools died. But this year, a bill in the House would, among other things, require those districts to give charter schools access to unused public school facilities, and the charter schools would only have to pay for maintenance.
Would that be something that we would be excited about in the public school arena? I would tell you that you'll have a hard time finding a public school educator that's going to feel like this is a plan that best serves the needs of the students that are in public schools.
That's Wakulla County Superintendent Robert Pierce. Opponents to the move have called it a land grab and characterize it as giving public money to private entities. But in a House committee meeting, supporters of the proposal argue charter schools are public schools and they deserve parity.
And that is, there's an underlying bias here that really concerns me.
That's Republican Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala.
We're hearing language like giving buildings away. We're hearing language like not a public school. These are public schools. I mean, and it's just an absolute bias against an alternative way of managing schools that keeps treating it as not part of our family. These are uses that are legitimate.
The proposal is favored more by for-profit charter school companies and less so by not-for-profits. It cleared the House Appropriations Committee and has one more stop in that chamber. There are companion bills in the Senate, but several key senators like Democrat Bill Monford and Republican David Simmons have said they don't support the House bill. Meanwhile, Wayne Blanton with the Florida School Board Association says districts don't mind sharing for a fee, and he proposes charter schools should pay rent. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
As National Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is April, approaches, child abuse survivor Lauren Book is again teaming up with Florida lawmakers and state attorneys. She's advocating for passage of a bill that would expand Florida's victimless prosecution law. Sasha Cordner reports the measure would extend the age for child abuse victims to not have to face their abuser in court.
Oftentimes it feels as a victim that you're the one who's on trial. And that's why I'm really, really excited about this bill.
Lauren Book is a child abuse survivor who was sexually assaulted by her nanny from the time she was 11 years old to age 16. She says she knows what it's like to have to face your abuser in court, and she doesn't want that for other child abuse victims.
Imagine having to see the person that you once loved, but who also abused you, defecated on you, threw you down a flight of stairs, that's what happened to me. I was scared, and I was betrayed, and so I had to face her in open court.
That's why Book is advocating for a bill sponsored by the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee that would broaden Florida's victimless prosecution law and provide an alternative for victims. Its committee's chair is Republican Representative Matt Gaetz.
The law provides out-of-court statements made by a child victim up to the age of 11 to be admissible as evidence in a child sex abuse case. And our proposed legislation, House Bill 7031, will extend that option to children up to the age of 16 years old.
And it's a proposal backed by the Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association. Its president, Bill Edens, who's also the state attorney for the First Judicial Circuit, says this would greatly aid prosecutors in cracking down on sexual predators. Edens says for prosecutors, it's hard at times to rely on a child who has difficulty expressing themselves since they're scared to share their personal story in court in front of so many people. He says that's why taped interviews done by a Child Protective Team, or CPT, after the initial reporting of the incident are much more effective.
And they do it in a very relaxed setting. They're very professional. And because we have that tape, I'd like to point out that those tapes basically freeze time. They normally occur shortly after disclosure. They show the age of the child, the physical condition, their demeanor, their emotional condition. That is very much more detailed and given under much better circumstances without being cross-examined, and is very helpful to the jury and very helpful to prosecutors.
And State Attorney for the Second Judicial Circuit, Willie Meggs, agrees. He says in his experience, he's seen that as victims of this type of crime get older, they also don't want to talk about their abuse in front of other people.
It's kind of interesting, a little, and this will almost sound crude, but a very young child will say, well, he touched me on my pee-pee. Mm. Well, then when they get to be 14 years old, they don't say that. They're embarrassed about it. And so being able to use that tape to describe it in the detail that we actually need for a jury trial is a tremendous tool for us.
The bill also has several other provisions, including if a person has a third conviction of indecently exposing themselves, the penalty would increase from a first-degree misdemeanor to a third-degree felony. It has not yet been taken up in any committees yet. Its first committee stop will be the House Justice Appropriations Subcommittee. Meanwhile, abuse survivor Lauren Book is expected to advocate for the bill during her fourth annual 1,500-mile Walk in My Shoes journey, which starts Tuesday in Key West. Her 36th day walk will run into April, which is National Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This year's theme focuses on child sexual abuse prevention. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
When it comes to water quality standards, Florida's Department of Environmental Protection hasn't exactly been seeing eye to eye with its federal counterpart in recent years. The feds have been pushing a single set of standards for the entire nation, but Florida officials, like Drew Bartlett with the state's DEP Water Division, insist Florida is a unique place and its water standards should be unique as well.
What we're talking about are water quality standards for nitrogen and phosphorus, and these are what we call nutrients. And when you get too much nitrogen and phosphorus in our waterways, then you'll have algal blooms, and it will offset the ecology of the waterway and, you know, impede recreational opportunities of the waterways.
The state has been fighting for the authority to set its own nutrient standards, an effort that Bartlett says got a big boost late last year.
And we set them for rivers and streams and lakes and a number of estuaries last year, and EPA approved them in November, and now we're trying to get all of our estuaries done and the rest of our water bodies with these nitrogen and phosphorus limits.
Now, Bartlett says, another huge part of the puzzle has fallen into place.
An important part of getting it done is getting EPA approval. And so as we've been working with EPA, we said if we do it, you know, we can do these types of measures and these types of actions. And does that work for you? And so what we've heard and what we're announcing here is in 2013, we're going to get these levels established and approved by EPA.
Reaction to the agreement between the state and feds was quick in coming. The Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services had been pushing for Florida-specific standards for years. Rich Bedell directs the department's Division of Agricultural Water Policy.
To us, it just makes a lot of sense. I mean, the intent in the Clean Water Act was for states to take the lead in developing their criteria under the guidance of EPA, not for EPA to do it. So we're very pleased with the result.
Florida's business community was likewise cheering the deal. The Florida Chamber of Commerce released a laudatory statement. Tom Feeney, who heads Associated Industries of Florida, also praised the agreement.
This settlement between the federal government and the state of Florida actually brings some certainty. It also makes Florida a very proactive state in cleaning up and dealing with its water quality issues. And so this is a very attractive way to tell businesses that Florida is a great place to do business. We understand what we need to do to make our water quality better in the future, and we're way ahead of other states.
The agreement also has opponents. One of them is David Guest of Earth Justice.
The public was cut out of this backroom deal, and we see it as simply a sellout. There are record numbers of manatees that have been killed by red tide just recently. That's a horrible, horrible disaster that resulted in substantial part from contamination from sewage, animal manure, and fertilizer.
And Guest noted final permission for Florida to adopt its own water quality standards is by no means a done deal.
This plan requires federal court approval to determine whether it complies with the Clean Water Act. As written now, I can't imagine that it is.
Even if the federal government approves the Florida standards at the end of this year, Guest says environmental groups like his will be back in court fighting the decision. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Now here's Ronald J. Evan with a look at what's going on around the Capitol on Monday.
Monday morning, the Senate Gaming Committee, bright and early at 9 a.m., will take up a bill by Senator John Thrasher to ban Internet cafes in Florida. This following a statewide investigation that has already resulted in the arrest of 57 people and the resignation of Florida's lieutenant governor. Florida has about 1,000 Internet cafes employing 15,000 people. The Florida Department of Highway Safety and Donate Life Florida will hold an event at 10 o'clock. It's to promote organ donations. The Senate Select Committee on Patient Protection and the Affordable Care Act meets at 9. The Senate Commerce and Tourism Committee will convene to take up a bill relating to state funding of improvements at Sun Life Stadium, the home of the Miami Dolphins. The House Civil Justice Committee will take up a bill encouraging school districts to promote public access to outdoor recreational and sports facilities on school property. And the Senate Criminal Justice Committee will consider a bill that specifies that a person who commits multi-acts of animal cruelty may be charged with a separate offense for each act of cruelty. The committee will also consider a bill that provides for the expungement of the criminal history of a victim of human trafficking under certain conditions. And those are some of the items on the 2013 legislative agenda for Monday, March 18th. I'm Ronald J. Evan.
Finally this week, the new Holy Father in Rome is the first pope from Latin America. Ryan Bank reports how some Florida Catholics are reacting to the new pontiff, who comes from a land with a lot of connections to the Sunshine State.
According to a 2010 census report, there are more than 2 million Catholics who call the state of Florida home. There are still more citizens of the state who identify themselves as being of Latin American descent. And the bishop of the Pensacola-Tallahassee Catholic Diocese, Gregory Park, says the election of an Argentinian pope finally addresses the church's diversity.
It is definitely a historic moment in the church to have a pope
elected from Latin America who is Spanish-speaking. And I think that it really speaks to or symbolizes the fact of the cultural diversity that is present in the Catholic Church worldwide.
Archbishop Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Buenos Aires, Argentina, is known for his humble love of people, helping the poor and caring for the sick, more specifically his work with HIV-positive patients. Florida Catholic Jim Ladner hopes the man now named Francis will bring more meekness to what some say is an increasingly distant Vatican administration.
We see it on a daily basis with the priest. And, you know, they're the humble type, and they work with us and everything else. But as you go up in a hierarchy, I sometimes become a little detached from the people. I think this Pope's going to reemphasize going back to the people.
Pope Francis's predecessor, Pope Benedict, was seen as more of an intellectual and less of an administrator. This is what many Catholics believe led to his resignation amid growing sex abuse scandals within the church. Ladner hopes Francis will be a better manager.
Pope Benedict was a theologian and a very religious person, you know, very similar to Pope John Paul. They were both out of the same book. Pope Francis is going to be an administrator. Hopefully he can straighten some of the problems out in the Catholic Church.
More than simply an administrator, Bishop Parks would like the new pontiff to be a strong spiritual leader.
What we do see in him is a man whose life has been motivated by love, love for the poor, love for the disenfranchised, for the ill, for the castaways of society. And he has demonstrated that love for them through his life and through his ministry.
There are many differences between the newly elected pontiff and his predecessor, but when it comes to Catholic tenets, the two are very closely aligned. Both popes toe the conservative line when it comes to the role of women in the church, abortion, contraception, and homosexuality. For now, Florida's Catholics are just happy they no longer have a vacancy in their holiest of seats. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2013 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Retail Federation, serving small businesses since 1937. Florida's retailers employ nearly 2 million Floridians and collect more than $19 billion in sales taxes for the state each year. The Florida Retail Federation, frf.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection, with connections to over 330 destinations worldwide. Fares and information online at delta.com. And from the Florida Historic Capitol Museum, restored to its 1902 appearance, offering space for meetings, special occasions, or political gatherings for up to 200 people. Rental information at 850-487-1902 or flhistoriccapitol.gov. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.